Never thee, thou foul varlet, Sir Scotius.
Oh, no, no, I've got a lame leg. Leave me out of it.
We need seven of us to fight this battle against those other seven Japanapes.
Sir Ginnyloth's horse has broken down.
I could personally take on two myself, but I've got this sore leg.
We need seven. We need seven. And Fakey's got the squids, so she can't.
I don't trust her bowels anymore.
No. Can we fighting the same? Can Sir Pertwee hold a sword in his teeth?
Yeah, maybe. So that'd be what, five of us? Can we knight some other people quickly?
Sandy?
Sandy, yeah, okay, yeah.
Sir Sandy.
Terence?
Yeah, we need a dragon.
Oh, definitely. Huzzah!
To battle!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this, another in the long line of Staggering Stories podcasts.
So very long.
Another long line.
I'm Aster Man.
I'm Jay.
I'm Adam.
And I am merely Keith tonight.
Just singular.
Oh. Yes, yep. Just the one.
Sit in your corner.
Quietly sobbing to myself.
She is dead.
Been slain.
Yep.
No, she's at a council meeting.
But oh, same thing.
Same thing. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, without further ado... The news with El Presidente!
Woohoo!
Doctor Who news.
Yay.
Doctor Who, McGann goes ultra.
Ooh, he's going to take some names.
In his little book.
Ultra McGann.
Doctor Who, the TV movie, is back. And it's about time.
Yay!
That is about time somebody finally located the original film footage and reconstructed it into both high def and ultra high def for our disc purchasing pleasure. Mm. Up until now, all versions have been converted from the original Fox TV effort in rather poor quality 480i. I hope somebody out there knows.
480i, yes.
So somebody out there knows what that means. At 30 FPS. Mm. Even the UK version was a standard conversion to PAL at 25 FPS from that source. Now we are going to get a proper filmic 24 FPS version scanned from the original film to make it look like an actual movie.
Mm. Finally.
A whole raft of special features will be included, such as the uncensored UK edit, the US edit, the original stereo audio, and the new 5.1 mix. An in-conversation interview with director Jeffrey Sachs, a Sylvester McCoy and Janet Fielding featurette, plus three more with Daphne Ashbrook, Eric Roberts, and G.J. Tussle. I probably screwed that up and I apologise.
Jisoo, I think.
Jisoo.
The 7-year hitch making of documentary, etc., etc. Oddly, Paul McGann appears entirely absent from this newly created special feature, though Sylvester McCoy is there and also providing a voice for the trailer that you can hear now on YouTube. The film will be released on Blu-ray and 4K Blu-ray and as a still box with both. There is currently no release date given, but it can be pre-ordered now.
Mm. Yeah, I think the only thing that made it look a bit cheaper was that soft sort of American look to it, wasn't it? It'd be nice to...
Slightly fuzzy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because they obviously have a lower resolution, or did have a lower resolution picture than we do.
525.
We did. Yeah. And different frame rate too, so they had to be converted. So it's converted from 24 to 30, then back to 25.
Yeah.
And there was a pitch change as well with the audio.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on at the time, wasn't there?
Yeah, so this ought to be a lot better, because they haven't reconstructed entirely from the original film.
Oh, the original film, okay.
So they're going to get the edits exact, find the right footage.
Yeah.
The actual shots are used match the complete edit of every single shot. Yeah, basically rebuild it from scratch.
Boy,
I can't remember. Was it 4.3, the original?
Yeah, and I assume that this will be 4.3, yeah. 4x3 as well. Yeah.
So this is the question I'm going to have to ask myself. I've usually put in state a rule, if I've got it once, I won't get it again.
There have been many versions of
it. Yeah, yeah, I've got it twice.
I know I've got at least one copy of this somewhere.
Yeah.
So is it worth it?
I think it will be. I think it's going to be a dramatic improvement.
You won't have any version like this. You can burn your others in front of the new one.
Yeah, and there's not much in the way of 4K for Doctor Who. They released twice upon a time, rather.
Yeah.
Which I think was upscaled anyway.
Yeah.
And all the stuff they've been showing on 4K on iPlayer, you know, all the Whittaker stuff and all the new Who, hasn't come out in 4K on disc. It's only come out in regular HD.
Oh, it's like the rarity.
Yeah.
We've had this discussion before about the quality improvement. Is it enough? I mean, some people, it will be. Whatever it happens, it's an improved version. Is the quality better enough for me? This is the question.
It's pretty much going from VHS to high def.
Yeah, that would be the level, I've got to admit. Yeah.
It's strange that Paul isn't involved in the extras.
It is weird, isn't it? I'm surprised it's Sylvester McCoy doing the voiceover on the trailer. Yeah. But okay, he's in it. But then all the special features, there's no mention of McGann at all.
No, because there was rumours sometime last year where he was seen filming with a police box on a beach somewhere. And I just assumed this would be...
Yeah, unless they're holding something back, which they might be.
Oh, okay. Hopefully.
Wasn't that just an AI picture, though?
There was an AI picture on set.
There was an AI picture on set.
That was from a console room.
Yeah.
With what appears to be craft services right up against the console, pretty much. I don't think that happens. Well, we'll see. It can be pre-ordered now, as mentioned. It's £35 for the steelbook, expensive one, so I assume it's about £25. For the regular Blu-ray?
I might wait a little bit until maybe the price drops before I make up my full mind, I think. But that's me.
Star Trek news.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Science Museum's 60th celebration. Ooh. Star Trek is celebrating its 60th anniversary this very Earth year. Unlike the 50th, this time there appears to be at least some attempt to mark the occasion.
not really so much from Paramount themselves.
No, not at all. London's Science Museum has a series of events scheduled for March until September. Throughout the museum, you will find various Star Trek-inspired exhibits, including original props and explorations of the real-world science behind the likes of the warp drive and replicators. Ooh. You will be able, for a fee, to watch all 13 Star Trek films on their IMAX screen, one screening each at roughly weekly intervals. During a special late-night opening launch party on the 26th of March, you will see musicians, scientists, speakers, comedians and performers to put on a show and get the screening of the first Star Trek film. Okay, that does sound nice. 26th of March, is that a Doctor Who day from 20...
It is from 20.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Stealing our day.
There we are. Well, at least they're doing something this year. What a place to go for it, the Science Museum.
Yeah.
It's the right place for it.
Yeah, I haven't heard much else of what's happening.
There's a few things that are on the Science Museum's website, actually. Yeah. So this is the late is what they're talking about.
Yeah, the late night thing launch party
on Tuesday. Thing. So there you can get the access to the Star Trek trail, where they've got objects from the archives and discover behind-the-scenes details, cosplay stuff that you can bring up and do there. They're going to have a 360-degree Enterprise bridge experience. Doesn't say which bridge they're talking about,
though. I think it's the D, but I could be wrong.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a comedy night on the maths stage. That sounds
interesting.
And so for the, as you mentioned, the science questions of things like augments and replicators. And you can explore all of the other Science Museum free galleries at night as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a few things from Star Trek are now sort of real world things, aren't they? Tablets and communicators through your phone.
Yes. Although I know Star Trek fans make a big thing of this, but actually, tablets were in 21 A Space Odyssey before Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay,
communicators are just the next version of walkie-talkies that military are already using. It's not that big a stretch that they can talk to their ship from the ground. They'd have to have that anyway, so it's not that big an invention, really. But okay.
We have got lasers.
He's poo-pooing us.
Portable.
It's not like a police box bigger on the inside, is it?
All right. Good Omens dated.
Ooh.
Fans of the Michael Sheen and David Tennant slash fiction, really, can rejoice. We have a date for the grand finale of Good Omens. After the well-documented fall from grace for the surviving writer of the original novel duo, the third season has morphed into a 90-minute special. Mm. That special will be released on the 13th of May on Prime Video, with a story by credit to Neil Gaiman and teleplay credits for Gaiman, Michael Marshall Smith, and Peter Atkins. No John Finnemore this time. He co-wrote the second season with Gaiman. But this special has been directed by none other than Rachel Talalalalay.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. There was some speculation that Gaiman's name be taken off entirely, but apparently it won't be.
No.
But it does seem like these other two might have come in and rewritten what he'd done for the third season and condensed it into this 90-minute special.
Mm. It's going to just dilute him a little bit if they can't take him off completely.
Yeah.
So they had to do something because it was quite popular, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was all set up for the third season at the end of season two.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have just dropped it. Let's face it, the people like Netflix certainly do all the time, but...
Well, it wouldn't have stopped them, but it did. Season two did end on something of a cliffhanger.
It did, yeah. Well, I look forward to it.
But,
I wonder if this could be the last Neil Gaiman project we see on screen, or if he might get some kind of redemption arc. I don't know.
Don't know. Depends how he handles it.
Indeed. He has. I did see a headline talking about he's come on record recently saying it's a smear campaign. I didn't read into it, but he's denying it.
It's just one of these things. We have to see how it plays out with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very hard to know, isn't it? Yeah. You can't judge somebody without due process, but at the same time.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It's a tricky one. But anyway, Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Goes Shakespearean.
Forsooth.
Does thou want another Game of Thrones prequel? Are you near Stratford-upon-Avon in this summer?
Maybe.
If so, then the Royal Shakespeare Company has a play for you. Game of Thrones, The Mad King. We set a decade before the original TV series, and George R.R. Martin is avoiding writing further novels by acting as executive producer for this play. The RSC describe it as such. A long winter started to thaw, and for the first time in years, all the great houses come together for a tournament destined to be the greatest of the age. It feels like a new dawn, full of hope and opportunity, but tournaments always have a darker purpose.
Ooh.
Public booking, with no doubt more details, will open in April. So, yeah, interesting.
Yes.
Game of Thrones stage play.
Stage play,
by none other than the RSC.
Yeah. It's going to be full Shakespearean.
Yeah, so presumably they will fall back on their normal RSC members, so the guys who are normally doing Shakespearean plays, have them play Targaryens.
That could be some interesting names up there as well.
It could be. I wouldn't be surprised if they have one or two big names attached to it, but they haven't announced who's in it yet.
Watch this space.
Yeah. Also, I don't know when it's going to be on, in the summer for some period of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to see it, you're probably going to have to book pretty quickly, certainly for weekends, if you want weekends.
Any addendums?
I have one solitary addendum, and it is distantly related to sci-fi, our favourite subject, but it's more closer to the heart of one of the members of this team.
Ooh.
Yes.
Something who's here or not?
Over the past couple of years, HBO Max has gradually removed classic cartoons from their streaming service.
I didn't know they had classic cartoons.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Shows like Powerpuff Girls, Scooby-Doo, Ben 10, the older Batmans.
Oh, yeah, the animated series.
Yeah, they have been, and they have been very difficult and troubling to watch. You can't find them.
Yeah.
However, the streaming channel Tubi is coming to our rescue.
Ooh. Right.
From March the 1st, we'll have the first wave of shows to be watched, which is Ben 10, Powerpuff, Justice League, Codename Kids Next Door, Ed, and Eddie.
Oh, I've heard a couple of them. I haven't ever seen any of them.
But we have Abbott and Costello cartoons, Adam's Family 74, Adventures of Batman, The Animaniacs, Aquaman, Astro and the Star Mutts, Atom Ant, Baby Looney Tunes, Batman Brave and the Bold, Be Cool Scooby-Doo, Beetlejuice, Ben 10, and Beware the Batman.
There's lots of different versions of Ben 10.
Yeah. Well,
Batman too, apparently.
Yeah. I heard Animaniacs. I've just noticed Animaniacs. They're on your shelf.
Yeah, you have Wacko Echo and Dots there.
Excellent.
We'll also be having Pinky in the Brain.
Hey. Nice.
Justice League. Yep. Dexter's Laboratory.
Well, hey.
Ed, Ed and Eddie. Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Oh, yes.
Tasmania. Uh-huh. And, of course, The Foster Home for Imaginary Friends.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
No, I do. They used to be on Cartoon Network when we had Cartoon Network.
Yes. Oh, them's were the days.
Definitely some good ones in there.
Is there no Cartoon Network anymore then?
No. Cartoon Network has gone the way of all organic matter.
Oh, in the entire world or just in the UK?
Well, I think it's just in the... Well, certainly in the UK we can't get
on. Yeah, because they still barely an Adult Swim now.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I was going to say, it's the last thing I remember on it was Adult Swim. Because I watched a lot of that.
Yeah.
Well, that's where you introduced us to...
Venture Brothers.
No. Aqua Teen. Sea Lab.
Brack, Space Ghost.
Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Robot Chicken.
It's gone. Yeah. It will come to me halfway through the
this
podcast.
This won't take too long. Squid Billies. Okay.
Any more addendums?
No, I only have the one.
Thus endeth the news.
Yay! Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have been listening to some Doctor Who.
Ooh.
Pause for music.
So we went for the variety pack, didn't we?
Pick a mix.
I was asked to suggest a Peter Davison because Fake Keith, who I have to point out,
is dead.
Is not here. Yeah. She's not dead.
She
Stop
loves his bland open face.
wanted a Peter Davison, so I desperately threw the first thing that came into my head into the pot.
It's a good choice. The mixed bag affair.
It was a very mixed bag. It's called, the disc we listen to is a Big Finish audio monger, and the one that we are listening to is The Demons of the Red Lodge and Other Stories.
Ooh, main range 142 from December 2010. Not very Christmas.
Released on my birthday.
Oh, really? So,
yeah. Released on 15th of December 2010.
Yes. Hey, you're right. It didn't have a Christmas feel at all, did it?
Not even one of them. No, there are four stories here.
Yeah.
Arguably five.
But we start fairly strong. We start with The Demons of Red Lodge. And we start in excellent Who form. Nissa and the Doctor wake up laying next to each other, unable to move and with no memory of the night before.
Yeah.
In the middle of a forest.
Good night out.
Pretty typical for those two.
Yeah. Only their bland open faces for defence. And gradually they piece together, that they can move their limbs, and they take shelter in a house, don't they?
They stumble.
17th century Suffolk, it turns out to be.
That's it. Initially, you think someone's been very nice and let them in, even though there's plague going around and we're a year off from the Great Fire of London.
There are nefarious motives, though.
Nefarious motives. We also get to hear in the forest another...
Yes, a slightly subdued...
Doctor and Nissa.
If that's possible.
Yeah.
So what, there are basically three actors in this one, is it?
Because the old woman in the lodge is a twin, I'm doing air quotes here, with her sister dying in bed.
Yes.
So we still think she's the nice one at this point.
At this point.
Not the evil twin.
Not the evil twin.
She hasn't got a goatee or an eye patch or a disfiguring scar.
But she definitely doesn't want anyone to see the dying twin sister, does she? She's very strict on that. So, of course, the first thing the doctor does is distract the old woman and send Nissa in to see the dying sister.
As you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we find out that, part of this alien... Well, actually, we don't find it out right then, but we find out there's this part of this alien race called the Spearer.
Yeah.
And they are gradually cloning people, which they need two goes in order to do it. They need... Yeah. The first one... pretty much takes the physical aspects, and then the second part just takes the mental aspects.
Yeah. I like the idea that we're just going to copy your body, then we're going to have a bit of a rest, and then we're going to come back for the mind.
Well, it was more that they needed the source material to have a bit of a rest.
Yeah,
because it's heavy going, all this copying.
Yes,
that's it, and settle down.
There's, what is it, 4 actual people in this play. The Doctor, Nyssa, Emily, who's the owner of the...
Emily, the almost nice.
Yeah, and then there's a couple of villagers.
They try to escape through a river, don't they? Get away from the cabin. And
they've got 2 people pretending to be villagers.
Yes. Yeah. Doing their best to be an angry mob.
Yeah. Pitchforks and rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb.
But quickly Nyssa realises that the dying sister in bed is the nice one.
Yes.
And that she's... I suppose being copied and absorbed at the same time.
Being absorbed, because we've got the body print and now she's taking the mental, because the sister in bed seems very disorientated to begin with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, these aliens, spirit, I don't know that Nyssa and the Doctor aren't human.
No. That's right. Especially the Doctor.
So they spend most of the episode trying to fight being duplicated by the doppelgangers.
Trying to
escape. Then Nyssa works out at the last minute that, no, Let's let this happen.
All of this comes down to math. Yeah. All the way through, the Spearer head, like Emily, is talking about like probabilities and numbers and stuff. Yeah. I mean, so the groundwork is laid for all of this, and it's Nyssa that, puts it together that essentially because the Doctor has 2 hearts and they've converted 100, they will be converting 100 people. She convinces the Spearer to just kind of take the average of everyone. She kind of insults the Doctor as she's doing it. But the plan is to get everyone to have like 1.01 hearts across them, and that kind of takes with it a whole bunch of different complications.
And a tiny fraction of a secondary cardiovascular system and a few other neat little traits that he's got going on.
Yeah.
And, of course, that finishes them off.
Yeah. What I do love about this one is that, it's the mystery of what the hell's going on to begin with, because it starts in camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We basically started at the beginning of episode 4.
It's all ramping up.
But it's the fact that it's not the Doctor that sorts the problem out. It is basically Nyssa who strikes gold.
Quite a bit to do, doesn't she? Because at one point, Spearer is trying to take her memories, and it reminds her of how much she hasn't dealt with the loss of Trakhan and her father. So we finally get to tackle that subject. So it's quite a somber moment where her and the Doctor watch the sunset together, like her and Treemass used to do on Trakhan. Mm. That leads us neatly into the next story,
which is
Entropy Composition.
Which I misread is by Rick Briggs.
Not Nick.
Nick.
Not a pseudonym, a very poor pseudonym.
No.
Actually, this guy won a competition, I think, in writing this one.
Yes, he did. Yes.
So they had an open submission competition where 600, 1,000 different entries, and he came out top.
Oh, this is Rick. No relation.
Yeah.
Went on to write a couple of other stories as well.
He
wrote Witch from the Well and the Acheron Pulse.
Can't say I know them, but...
It's a long time since I've recently heard... Witch in the Well, because that's the
Paul McGann and Mary Shelley.
It was one of the McGann Mary Shelley stories. I think it's maybe the 3rd one.
All right,
it follows on from the Cybermen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So this one, as with all 4 of them, it's the 5th Doctor and Nyssa as the main characters, and then this one is set over 2 different time zones. Archive of everything, it's only music at least.
In the far future,
a whole planet of it.
You'd like the library, I suppose, from
thinking that too,
Very quickly, they find a Trakhan sonnet or something, and as they open it, someone rushes in and goes, "No, don't open that, don't let it out." And it's too late. The killer note effectively has been released.
The brown note.
And so, if I'm right, that they have to find the brown note's origins.
Yes. So they, Jeff Cooper.
Yeah, they travel to Earth. The more this story went on, the more I could see the parallels between Jeff Cooper and Syd Barrett from Pink Floyd.
Oh, okay.
In that it was on? All, they kept mentioning he was into psychedelia and then he disappeared off the scene and he wasn't quite right now and again. But yeah, so I sort of took that from it. And this is why I was hoping Crumbly would be here, because he knows all about Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
He could tell me if I was right or not. Well, unless anyone else knows Pink Floyd.
We do have a Crumbly Scorner coming up later.
So excellent. Fingers crossed. And that effectively, they cancel the note out with its past self. Is that how it goes?
Yes.
Feedback loop?
There was a feedback loop played together slightly out of phase, so they cancel each other out.
It's like noise-cancelling headphones, effectively.
Basically, yeah.
But we're going to fight sound with sound.
Yeah, a sound from before the beginning of time, before Big Bang.
Yes, released by this Erisi, who's an entropy siren.
Right.
So before there were stars is when it happens, isn't it? So yes, maybe between the Big Bang and...
Yeah, one of these things that's before the Big Bang.
Forming the first stars, killed it off, I'm not sure.
They're beings of chaos. I always like the sound of that.
I found this one, not saying it's a bad story, I just found it the weakest of the lot. It's a good story, but I think
some nice comedy moments here.
I think the others were better.
Because I was thinking in my head, they're doing a take on Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. I kind of enjoyed it for that. It kind of gripped me.
I actually found it a little bit difficult to follow towards the end when there was a lot of noise. And it was very difficult to try and figure out what was going on over the cacophony. Mm. So that may not have helped things.
Yeah, I think... That's probably something.
But that's one of these things that, Big Finish do try to do these things where they are playing around with the medium and playing around with sound. It's a good way for them to do a Monstera.
Yeah.
They've done that a number of times before.
But it does depend a lot on the skill of whoever's doing the sound for this particular story, but also the environment you're listening to it in. Getting the full stereo effect. Are you getting...
I was listening to this in a train going up to London, so maybe not the best.
Not the best, yeah. I was in the car and it got decent sound system, so it wasn't too bad, but yeah.
We then have Doing Time.
What's the Doctor doing?
Well,
Dirty Boy.
This is basically Doctor Who meets the Shawshank Redemption.
It is, isn't it? Yes. It is. I love the fact that we start off with Nyssa continually trying to get arrested but failing to commit a crime.
Yeah. Continuously.
Breaking into an empty warehouse and such.
Is that a cry for help?
And also sort of the Doctor reorganising the prison library, teaching the inmates cricket.
Yeah, they've got more respect for him than they have the governor. At one point she wants to employ him, but he's there because he's detected an explosion in the Folly, which is the prison, which has travelled back in time, but it's in his future. So he's gone there to prevent the
explosion. It's in about a year's time.
But unfortunately, the name that he decides to use is the John Smith name. Mm-hmm. But that's a name that is kind of associated with, almost like a boogeyman
criminal organization.
Anything that goes wrong, it's this Dr. John Smith that's the cause of it. So when he turns up,
voiced by his own
baton. Okay, we're going to arrest you.
Immediately thrown into jail. Yeah.
And it's not a very nice jail, this. I mean, they are throwing people in solitary confinement left, right and centre.
In fact, the doctor gets shoved in solitary for 6 months at one point.
He broke the records for the longest person in solitary.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's only about a 30-minute episode, but so much time passes because you have the 6 months in solitary. Later on, the doctor gets stuck between two time barriers.
For a year.
Personal time, it would be in a year.
And although he's prepared for it, he comes out with a beard, which I thought was very funny.
Interesting trying to imagine the Fifth Doctor with a beard.
Have I ever seen Davison with a beard?
I don't think I have, but he wouldn't really have a round, bland, open face at that point.
No.
It'd be Santa. I think he did briefly have like a wispy young person's beard before he...
Would that be for tomorrow?
People? Oh, yeah, I've seen the old photos of him.
Yeah, in a hat.
I have seen that photo of him.
He looks incredibly young, doesn't he? But But yeah, no, his bland, open face was hidden behind a beard towards the end of the episode. But in the end, he's been talking about this explosion so much that the governor decides to use it to her advantage.
Yeah, to run for president.
That's it. She'll make sure that explosion happens, that lots of people die at the folly, and she'll be there in the middle running round, saving the day, directing it, and then she's bound to be elected.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird, because it's almost like a predestination paradox, but then it gets subverted at the end, because it doesn't actually happen.
Yeah. No, because the doctor knows of it happening. He tells everyone it's going to happen, but they only made it happen. The governor only decided to make it happen because he told
the doctor. Yeah,
but then he stopped it happening.
He stops it happening, so he couldn't have been told about it.
No,
he couldn't really have detected it in the future. So
seemed to work.
Yeah,
yeah. You sort of was saying it was some kind of echo or whatever. Yeah, but
a potential
kind of hand wavy there.
Yeah, yeah. Timey wimey. Mm.
Not quite a fixed point.
Yeah,
yeah.
One of my favourite lines is from Nyssa. Right. Let me through. I'm a desperate criminal.
Oh, you've called me breaking and entering again. You'll have to arrest me now.
Oh, we did mention on the last one that she put on this silly voice pretending to be some kind of groupie.
Oh, yeah, she was a cockney, didn't she?
She gets a lot to do, actually, in these four.
She does.
So far, they have both sort of stepped outside their usual acting range. Because certainly in the first one, they got to be villains, the doppelgangers.
Yeah, they did.
And you said in this one, on the last one, she was a hippie groupie with strange cockney.
With ease.
And they completely dropped out the very next scene, still talking to the same woman.
Yeah.
The doctor seems very surprised as that was Nyssa was able to do such things.
You always expect to go, you're feeling all right, Nyssa.
And then we have the last one, which I think on the whole is my favourite, certainly for the conceit.
It's very meta, isn't it?
Yes.
It certainly has some amusing moments too.
Yeah, where are we?
Special features.
Yeah. The only way I can describe it is a commentary on
commentaries.
Yeah, commentary on commentaries. It's presented as a commentary for a Hammer House of Horror style film.
Yeah, 1970s horror film. Yeah, British horror film.
The British horror film, it's a take on something like Tales of the Crypt, where you like the stories we're listening to. It's kind of an anthology film, isn't it?
It is,
lots of different stories.
A portmanteau, I think the term
that's
was.
That's it. Yeah. And the main guy, the older guy, who's quite a regular famous Big Finish actor.
The voice sounded familiar.
Was it Ian someone? I can't remember.
Ian Brooker.
Ian Brooker, So he was there right from the start with Big Finish. Apparently he's playing a different character in every one of the anthology films, stories, and he was the narrator, so he does like the Crypt Keeper, doesn't he, at one point?
Does the various
quite
voices.
Funny.
Good excuse to...
But this one also kind of ties back to the first one, because...
The Red Lodge is mentioned.
The Red Lodge, I mean, this is kind of meant to be the filming of, like, what was happening at the Red Lodge in the first one, but it was changed slightly for... or reasons or whatever, but I mean, Red Lodge was definitely mentioned. And
it was. And it turns out that the doctor has doctored the footage somehow and removed the imagery and replaced it with some of his own.
Yeah.
So that the, not curse, that's probably not the right word, but the...
It was kind of like an embryo. So this alien race, the Rasht, they were able to infest people when you're looking at certain imagery and certain words are spoken.
Yeah, the hub, the shield.
Yes,
that's the imagery.
And it reminded me of one of the McGann stories for Doom Coalition. Is it the Red Lady, where the more you look at her,
the closer she gets, that she
turns round, and it's sort of that, not quite a Weeping Angels, it's the reverse of a Weeping Angel, isn't it? You've got to look at it to get the effect.
Some of my favourite lines in this.
Oh, yeah.
It's not me. Not me either. I've got a BAFTA.
Funny enough, the BAFTAs were on last night.
Yeah, it's quite.
I love that the way it's played for real, particularly at the beginning. You know, it's quite really played like a DVD commentary, isn't it?
A really bad DVD commentary.
Yeah. That they're just stating what they're seeing, aren't they? For the most part, because
people who have died.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about everyone that died?
And a great little movie. Nyssa Traken.
Yeah, that's right.
She didn't appear in anything else, though.
No, and that reminded me of, did you ever watch Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
Oh, yeah.
Where the female actress, they keep making out that she's died since making the series and never seen again. And, yeah. And then they suddenly remark that Nyssa and the Doctor haven't aged
yeah.
a day.
Yeah. Strangely, that.
Weird.
Well, the original story it's based on is about either a physician or a vicar and his niece.
Yes.
That's so right, guess yeah. who those they
yeah,
were.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And actually, Nyssa isn't in this one very much.
Not very much. No, she's there.
She's lurking in the sound booth.
Sound booth, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she gets a couple of lines in the actual film that they're watching.
Yes.
Yeah, you, if it. You listen carefully enough, you can hear her in the background.
Yeah,
there.
You get a lot of them talking over the footage, so you can hear the footage of the film. Mm-hmm. And then they're talking over it.
They're saying that these special features, the actual special features yeah. of this disc the in extras. General, how they had to record all that dialogue for the film yeah. that they were talking over in the commentary. So they effectively did five story recordings.
Yeah. Yes, it was very cleverly done. Oh, yeah. I did enjoy that last episode.
Yeah,
out of the four of them, I have to say the last one is the most memorable and to me. And I have heard these stories before, but as I was listening to the fourth one, I could start to remember that one. So that was the one right. that kind of most stuck in yeah. my mind
yeah.
back in some kind of forgotten little corner.
It's a bit more a personal experience as well, because we've all listened to the DVD commentaries. So you're sort of, yeah. you're living that moment with the people in the play.
And you can't help but also think of Davison in particular, how he sat on so many commentaries himself.
Yeah. yeah.
How he's here as the Doctor doing a commentary, yeah. thinking about his own experience of doing commentaries for Doctor Who DVDs.
You've got to speak.
Yeah.
They're a good little collection, this.
They are. It's yeah. a nice format. Because yeah. half an hour, 25-odd minutes per story, sound like it's too short. But actually, because of the speed of audio yeah. compared to TV,
yeah.
these are effectively two-parters,
yeah.
as they would be on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially.
And if there's any that you're not getting on with, or a weaker one there, you're on to the next one before you know it as well. Yeah. But I do like the format. Do they still do the four-episode celebrations?
Don't know.
I know they've done at least one for each Doctor, haven't they?
They did, yeah. But now they're doing the box sets for classic Doctors. I'm not sure if they still do this sort of thing or not.
No.
No.
Don't get your Christmas stories.
No. Yeah. This is obviously a main range one.
When they used to do main ranges.
But yeah, really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
It's a nice bit of fun. It really goes on quite a lick because they are short stories.
As you said, it takes you through a pace. You can easily... I listen to, again, what I usually do, listen to them on the way to work. And it was sort of one episode to and from work.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And I just sort of listened to it all in one go while I was in my room at home. So I had a day off and it just flew by. So I ended up getting through all four.
Right. Well, if anyone else has listened to The Demons of Red Lodge and other stories, please write to us and let us know at show@staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo.
Ladies and gentlemen, the majority of us here sallied forth over a Sunday to observe and experience.
Ooh. Immersively.
Immersively, yeah. Yes. Not quite a stage play, but an event. We watched The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Immersive Experience. Play music or open book?
Being hoopy fruits we are, we did go a quick to our towels, at least I did.
Well, it was immersive. I'm sure you had to dry off after that.
And yeah, we were there for the final performance.
Aye. So everything
Sunday the 15th.
Yeah, everything was smooth and they knew exactly what to do.
Mm. Yeah, and there was some method in the madness because the final performance obviously can get a bit more fun.
Yeah, add more ad libs and certain... Yeah. I'm not actually an unemployed actor, but I will be tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Ford, isn't it? Claiming to be an
unemployed actor.
Actor, yeah. Yeah, so it is a play.
Yeah.
But it's a play that's happening around you and the actors we'll try to involve some of the audience.
We got involved a couple of times. What is it? Mikey?
Oh, Micah.
Micah, yeah. Poor Micah.
Refusing to get involved. Despite being called out by
name. And then he ended up being the butt of the joke for
a few
on the rest of the play.
It's a Slarty Bartfast mentioned him a couple of times as well. The nature of the play itself, it basically takes all, what is it, six books? Five books? I can't remember.
I don't know how many books you want to count, but it takes bits from the series as a whole.
It puts the books in a blender and then cherry picks bits and pieces out of it.
Yeah.
So it's not the Hitchhiker's story as we know it, but you will be familiar with events and people in
there. Certainly the characters.
Yeah, yeah. We have the pub, first of all.
Yeah, we're all in the pub.
Yeah, so we're all in the pub there, and yeah, it's all sort of done for Arthur's going away party.
Yeah.
Then it sort of moves on to Heart of Gold.
Well, it's
sort
the Vogon Hull. And then sort of the Heart of Gold.
No, the Vogon, the Heart of Gold shuttle bay thing, or cargo bay, was the thing before.
You're
and
right.
Then we went to the Vogon hold.
Yeah.
And then we went to Magrathea. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where the sort of all the end stuff was done.
The total perspective vortex.
Yes.
One of those big zorbing balls.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it was quite enjoyable. It, like I said, it was a nice little mix up of what was going on. You got dragged around to two, three rooms, because one of the rooms split open and we shuffled into the next bit. And I answered a questionnaire from Lintilla.
Yes, one of the Lintillas.
One of the Lintillas. Yeah, they didn't have any more, fortunately.
No, didn't see any others. And the main characters were, of course, Ford, Arthur.
Yeah.
Plus you had Zaphod walking around the pub as well.
What I did like about Zaphod is when you first saw him, it's only one head, but he has this massive portable 1970s camera. Because where the second head is hidden.
Hiding, okay.
Yeah.
And each time you saw him, a different head was uncovered. The only time you saw the two heads is when he was on the screen and halfway through the mask went up. When he was walking around again, the other head is covered with a birdcage and a cloth because he's asleep. And this head is... So he had two suits where he would pop his head through each side.
That's very clever. So there was always a little reason as to why the other head couldn't be seen.
Yeah.
Good way to do it.
Who played Lintilla, by the way? Because that was Una Lenska.
It's all new actors. So she was one of the minor players. Because she didn't actually get up and do a piece.
Yeah.
Well, she was involved in some of the singing and dancing.
She was involved in some of the...
Essentially a chorus member, but she was also kind of had this little bit on the side. And some of the other... There was the priest
the
was
grape.
Doing that. Yeah.
The Arkelschneezer.
Yes. He was like one of the other little bit parts on the side as well.
We went into gospel at one point.
did you end up in the restaurant at the end of the universe?
No, we didn't make it to the restaurant at the end of the universe. But like I said, we did manage to make it to the total perspective vortex, which was one of these great big hamster balls that you can climb inside.
Oh, right, yes.
It was up on the ceiling with these LED lights in it and around it. And,
I've been zorbing. That sounds my kind of thing. LED lights in it.
I think I need to point out one little particular Herbert who heckled right at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, in the pub, yeah.
In the pub, because they weren't performing the actual text.
Right, okay.
But, I don't know which text he would have chosen.
If you look at Hitchhikers, each iteration is slightly different.
Yeah.
The book is different from the TV series, is different from the records, is different from the TV series, is different from the film. And what gets me is... What got me about this is the guy who was playing Arthur Dent stepped out of a character briefly and told him to be quiet.
Yeah.
But he recognised him. So obviously... Yeah. The critic has been there more than once. You're paying money. Why the hell do you go somewhere? I can't get my head around people who go somewhere to hate watch it. If you don't like it, don't go, turn it off.
Yeah, and the suggestion is he's already been once.
Yes.
He knew what he was getting.
Yeah, he came just to heckle, I think. Yeah, although he didn't seem to reject me. I think he was still there.
Yeah, well,
he shut up a bit.
He shut up, but he was complaining to them because Gene saw him complaining at the main desk.
At the box office at the end.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
My brain just can't get around the concept. Watch it once, don't like it. Fine. That's allowed. But to go back and hate watch it,
I know.
Just can't...
It is an atypical thing because it's basically a musical.
Yeah.
They have musical acts each of the locations.
Certainly at the bar, both
Fenchurch and Arthur
do karaoke.
All right, okay.
It's Ford and Fenchurch have a karaoke off, don't they?
Yes, yeah.
And then, Arthur joins in with Fenchurch at the end,
And Fenchurch gets left behind on the earth as it's destroyed.
Yeah.
And there's a whole thing about trying to get her back.
Yeah, that's kind of the overarching plot of this particular
wonderful scene, which I marveled at when they actually did it, is Arthur sort of encounters Fenchurch in a recreation. He's dressed in 1930s clothes. She's dressed as 1930s, and it is done as strangers on a train. But she is on video, is LED. Arthur is actually there while Fenchurch is LED, and they're interacting. Yeah. Lighting cigarettes and
passing things between each other. Yeah, his hand behind the screen. And
the way it is done is beautifully amazing.
Yeah,
and the timing.
Yeah, a lot of thought's gone into it.
Yeah,
and I'm looking at the website now, and you've got people who are recorded. So you've got Tamsin Grieg, Laura Critchlow, Samira Ahmed.
I thought it was
Tamsin.
Laura Critchlow. I thought she was Ghost.
Yep.
The American one with Hugh Laurie, the captain of the ship.
Oh, yes.
Name of it escapes me.
Avenue 5.
Avenue 5. Thank you, it. Yeah. And
I thought you were talking about something with this one, I think.
No.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure, but I thought it was.
Hmm. Yeah. So we got various. I think we got at least two of most of the cast because they do multiple plays a day. So as one set of people are in, say, the pub, the previous set of people are maybe at Magrathea or something.
Yeah.
They keep it churning. So you keep the same cast as you go through, then you have another cast that come through behind you, potentially, or in front of you.
That's one thing I think they did superior to the Unit 1. Unit 1 had about four or five groups running around at the same time. So it was confusing.
Chaos.
Mm. Yeah. Well, this one, yes, it's a large group, but you stay together, you move together, and you're all in the one group.
Yeah.
Which would, it came across as much better, more coherent.
Yeah, there's different full prefect here. Oliver Britton, who we didn't see, but we did see Matt Coyer. Very interesting way of doing it.
If you get the chance, if it goes on tour or another one is created somewhere else, I would recommend you go and see it.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to do because they took up a lot of area.
Yes.
They took up two studios at Riverside Studios to do it. So you move through these sets.
Yeah.
Big commitment of space.
Time and money.
And you've got quite a few actors. You have to rig up the sound systems at all the different locations. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of expense.
What was it like being at Riverside Studios?
Oh, I've been there a few times, but
It was my first time.
Yeah.
My first.
Yeah, same here.
But they had a slight digression in the display area. They had the Weetabix Dalek, the black and red one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it was the black and white era of Doctor Who, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hartnell through to some Troughton.
Yeah. Well, that's just down on the riverside. That's where they filmed
Dalek
Invasion of Earth with the Dalek coming out the Thames.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's forbidden to throw bodies in the river.
Use granddaughters.
Yeah. Sugar puffs.
I think it was a lot of fun, but I knew going in that it was basically a musical.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a really good job. I thought the casting
was really good. It was my very first time going to one of these immersive interactive experiences. I didn't really know what to expect, but it was thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah,
and it lasted about an hour and 50 minutes. Yeah. But it really didn't feel like you were entertained and engaged pretty much all the time.
It picked you up and carried you along.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're on your feet pretty much the entire time. There are a few spaces where you can sit, but basically you're on your feet.
Yeah. Mm. I didn't notice it until the end when we sat down and had lunch. That's when the feet started going, yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to interact with the characters a bit. Ford came up to us at the beginning.
Complimented you on your
jacket.
Oh, yeah. Dress sense. I was wearing a Ford Prefect-esque TV outfit.
Nice. Yeah.
TV version, yeah.
And so I interacted with one of the Lintillers.
Yes, you did.
You still have your survey?
I still have the survey, yeah. It's Keith with about five H's. This is the second interactive thing I've been to. And despite the chaos of the first one, I did enjoy that. Mm-hmm. I also enjoyed this one. So if you get a chance to do an interactive, I would recommend it. Mm. If you have been, seen, enjoyed, or even watched Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, why not drop us a line at
show
at
staggering
stories
dot
net.
Woohoo!
Robert Thompson was our Arthur Dent.
He was very good.
He was very good. Yeah, they were all very good.
Yeah, I think he was slightly more panicky and reserved than the usual Arthur Dent, but we did have a nice line of complete depression at the end of it before we ran back into Fenchurch. Well,
we didn't even mention Marvin.
No, we didn't.
I was going to ask. Did Marvin die, or did they omit that part?
No. It was someone wearing some mostly black, sort of with. You know, have you ever seen the Lion King stage show with the puppetry of the animals? Okay, well, basically, they had the sort of Marvin robot, and he was sort of doing the arms and stuff, and his legs were attached to the actor's legs. Once. And you had the actor there, open face, just kind of doing the voice for it. But, I mean, really, most of the time, you were just focused on Marvin. And, I mean, he had a pretty good whiny voice for doing it.
Yeah. Flat, whiny voice.
Yeah. And was pretty much complaining in different ways through the entire
good. That's what makes it. Show,
so, yes.
I think we did have one happy towards the end, but that didn't last very long.
No. Yeah, he didn't like being happy.
No. Ladies and gentlemen, we have also been watching A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Was it dark?
So dark.
Well, I got to admit here, I didn't watch a lot of this, I will admit.
You got fixated on one particular shot.
Well, you got to at least 10 inches of it, though, right?
The service that we use, or I use for this
particular
one.
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I watched the first episode quite easily, which I was all right. It gave me the gist of what was going on.
But it was a bit hard to get through the second episode.
Well, it took half an hour to download 9 minutes, which I got to admit, I gave up on. But the thing that really stuck in my craw...
sounds painful.
Stuck in your what?
...was the fact that it froze for about 10 minutes on this naked knight taking a whiz outside of his hut.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that stuck in your craw.
Yeah, it was.
This one didn't shrink in the cold.
All I can say is I hope it was a prosthetic, because if he ever got a hard-on, he would have passed out.
Well, this is my first foray into the Game of Thrones universe.
Really? Mm.
Yes.
Wow, okay.
So I was a little, would I enjoy it? Would I even get it?
This is a lot tamer than the rest of the stuff that we've seen on television so far. Game of Thrones has been very, very bloody and, well, I mean, there's been parts hanging out all over the place. Same kind of goes for House of the Dragon, but comparing this one to those two, this is a lot tamer. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get to episode 5, I think it is, that's when things really start to get bloody.
Yes. That's when the seven knights get together.
That's when we actually have the big fight. This particular series is based on the first part or book of the Hedge Knight series that George Martin...
Duncan Egg. Tales of Duncan Egg, yes.
Dunk that egg. Yeah, so just coming into it from there, it was actually quite easy to get into because it didn't come with the baggage of what was to come.
Yeah.
It was just focused, particularly in the first couple of episodes, it was around Dunk and Egg and those two characters, getting to know them, and it was actually quite slow to pick up.
Going through the first episode, there was two things that really struck out and occurred to me. One is the line from Blackadder 1.
All right.
Evening, my Lord Edmund. How do you know he's a lord? He hasn't got mud on his face. I never got bitten by the Game of Thrones bug. Fake Keith did. I was in the room while she watched it, so I was probably reading a book or on the tablet or doing something else. So I absorbed it through osmosis, but I was never really a fan. What mostly strikes me about it, and the thing I've got, about the only thing I've got to say, is it's Hong Kong phooey.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. Throughout the whole of the first episode, you have Sir Duncan, or Dunk, who is only just risen to knighthood. Inherited knighthood, shall we say. He's a bit of an innocent. He's got no real comprehension of what is going on in the world as Hong Kong phooey. Mm-hmm. You then have Dunk, who's only in it, not Dunk, Egg. Who's only in it for a little while from the first episode. Mm-hmm. But when he shows up properly, he's
a stalker.
Well, when he shows up properly, he's cleaned up the horses, made a fire, got something cooking on the fire, and is trying to find the tent to put up, and he's got all the bedding out. Mm-hmm. That's the cat. The egg is the one who understands and knows what's exactly going on and is probably going to save his life more times than we can mention.
Could be.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's a very different sort of series. It is about a hedge knight who's a guy who was just a squire to another hedge knight who was basically just a nobody but was himself knighted. And then
a very drunken nobody.
He was, played by Danny Webb. Yeah. We might know from such Doctor episodes as The Satan Pit.
And, Impossible Planet.
Yeah, indeed. And apparently, just before he died, he made Dunk another knight, because any knight can make somebody else a knight. Yeah.
Yes. He more or less inherited the role.
He's not born into nobility. Yeah. He's not been passed down through inheritance, this knighthood. He's just been bestowed it, effectively. But, of course, he isn't on any records. Nobody knows about him. He has to somehow prove that he's a knight to people.
That's basically what he was doing for the first episode, and getting into an argument or a fight with the Lord, the one with the antlers.
It was the first couple of episodes, really.
He's there to compete, isn't he?
Yes. There to make a name for himself, basically.
Yes, a bit like A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
He's wanted to come into the joust to make some money, get a bit of fame and fortune, but mostly have somewhere to sleep at night. Not under a tree.
Which leaks.
Yeah.
I haven't got anything against it. It's just that it's not my particular Milu. You know, I prefer my fantasy, not gritty reality, which Game of Thrones and this is. Yeah.
I'd agree with that. I think I was just relieved that it wasn't picking up from one of the other two series that
You could almost take this out of the whole Westeros universe completely, and it wouldn't make any difference.
It could just be random medieval history.
I wouldn't be aware if there were any Easter eggs for other stuff. I certainly didn't pick up on that.
Certainly, all the houses are named.
You've got the houses named there and mentioning previous kings and stuff as well. But,
so I recognise names. But
It fits into the timeline.
Other than that, as I say, there's very little you really need to know about Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon to be able to watch this and enjoy it.
Yeah. And I think that the first episode sort of ease you in. They're not exactly slow, but they're sort of introducing characters, getting the general sort of background together. And then at the end of the third episode, you find out that Egg's related to another character. That's his brother and his house. Is that it?
He's somewhere in the chain of succession for the Iron Throne, isn't he?
And he doesn't like his older brother, so he wants to serve a knight, become a squire.
Yes.
You certainly got that in the first episode, is Dunk didn't want him as a squire, but he turned up anyway.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's paralleled a little bit as you get into one of the later episodes where we get more of the backstory about Dunk and because he originally grew up in King's Landing, which is the capital of Westeros, and things were pretty grim to live in that. I mean, that in terms of fantasy realms across all various books and TV shows, whatever, Westeros is not one that I would want to live in because it is a pretty horrible place if you're not highborn. And even if you are highborn, then there's all these power plays and, well, I mean, Game of Thrones and stuff where you've got a good chance of dying from people trying to murder you to better themselves than in Fleabottom being lowborn, where you've got a good chance of dying of just
dysentery.
Having your throat slit by some nobleman.
Because you get the odd flashback to Dunk's childhood being a squire, don't you, for the night. And every scene he's just getting slapped. And it comes across funny, but it's actually quite harsh.
And that's what I was trying to... Oops. Yeah, as we see some of this backstory of Dunk, you see that Dunk was pretty much the same kind of stalker as... Egg was trying to be as well. So there are parallels that you see as time goes on.
Yeah, and you do see Egg trying really hard to manage his steeds and things like that.
They make an odd pair, don't they? Dunk the tall, and then you got little egg.
Little bald egg.
Yeah. Who's shaving his head just so he doesn't look quite as Targaryen, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he actually is. Targaryens are sort of the typical blonde-haired. Yeah,
blonde-ash.
Yeah, and he always reminds me of the kid from The Matrix with the spoon. Even though he must be well in his 30s by now.
Yeah. Egg and spoon?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But yeah. So we've watched the first 5 episodes. I've still got episode 5 to go. But apparently that's where the gore kicks in.
Oh, yeah. The gore really kicks in in that 5th episode.
Because I know that when we got the cliffhanger of the 3rd episode, I was like, right, I'm ready. Now I want to watch the next one. It took me 3 episodes to get into it. So now that the gore's kicking off, I'll brace myself for that.
Is it the end of the 4th episode where the Game of Thrones theme kicks in, or a variation on it?
Yeah.
It almost did. It almost did in the first episode.
Yeah, well, to comic effect, right at the beginning. As he has a quick dump, he did not look well.
That was really hard to watch these scenes with the bodily functions and stuff. So.
Yeah, and they were both in the first episode. There was the sort of things I don't need.
The thing against the tree was the first episode, and then the thing that Keith got stuck on was
for 10 minutes. I'm just killing himself. Walk down. What the hell are you watching?
An inch a minute.
See, I had these problems quite a few years ago when those Spartacus programs were started.
Oh, with Xena.
I sat down with my parents who were already watching something like that. And all of a sudden there's a big gay orgy coming on and nothing has been left.
Where do you look?
Yeah. And you just have to get up and leave the room. Oh, does anyone want a coffee? I'm just going to put the kettle on because I can't be there when it's on.
Oh, dear.
But it was a good entrance to the series.
Okay. Not where you're going with that. Yeah. It's got a second season coming. It has survived, which is good.
R.R. Martin's actually written those books already, so...
Yes.
That's lucky before he does this... stage play.
Yeah, and he's quite involved with this one. Yeah. I know he's not so involved with House of the Dragon, and he's quite dismissive.
He was for the first couple of seasons, and then kind of got very upset with the way how things were going in that second season, to the point where he just got me through another tantrum.
Yeah, so hopefully he won't do on this, because he's more involved.
Yeah.
Also, the format is different. It's not extra long episodes.
Yeah.
They are generally about half hour each. The first one's about 45 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it gets you into it.
The story is quite simple. It's not going between different characters and different lands and
different houses.
Yeah, because this is really kind of based on a short story.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are short stories that the Hedge Knight is part of.
Much more focused in that way.
So it works well to adapt to, was it 6 episodes of TV? One more episode, which was last night, and I haven't seen that one yet. So
no, I've not seen that one yet either.
How many episodes is the season?
I think it's 6.
Yeah.
So oh, okay. There are now 6 hours. 2 left.
I shall give it another go if I can get past the willy.
Ask Karen to skip for me.
She could describe it if you want.
Zoom.
Not that
zooming
you need
in that.
So, if you have been watching The Hedge Knight, or have anything else to comment about Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, tell us at
show@staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo!
I'm constantly staggering tonight.
You know who isn't staggering?
Is he recovered from the battle?
Danny Webb, is he not staggering?
he's at least he's got something to fall on.
All together now.
Hello, head of Pertwee!
And handles and...
Inky and Dinky McSquirts a lot.
Terence, Dave Zilla.
Graham.
Sandy. Animaniacs.
Oh!
They're crazy to the max.
The goats.
Various nebulas folded up.
Propped against the radiator, Clara.
I see your face, Clara.
The Moomin.
The Moomin. And of course, Hilda Knobknacker.
No feedback this time, but we do have a Crumbly's Corner.
Crumbly's Corner!
Hello, Crumbly here.
Hello.
Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I'm currently having a few days in Hampshire with Fake Crumbly. Ooh. However, I'm submitting one of my legendary massive missives about what has been discussed here tonight.
Not another one.
Did he watch it as well?
Unto a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yep. He did.
All I can say is, in days of old, when knights were bold, very tall and slightly dim, the tale is told of Sir Dunk,
Sir Dunk,
a humble hedge knight who dreams of wearing shiny armour and riding a noble steed. However, he has to start from very humble beginnings, sleeping in the rough and crapping behind their trees. As befits his title, he is very tall and not the sharpest pencil in the case, unfortunately. He was squire to Sir Arlan of Pennytree, who only used to beat the young Dunk when it was absolutely necessary.
With what, we wonder?
His immediate dream is to participate in the local tourney. Along the way, he meets with a young boy, Egg, who wishes to be Dunk squire. Let's just say the series shows what happens on the way to the tourney, and we have some revelations on the way also. The foremost being is Egg is more than just a humble squire.
Dun, dun, dun.
My thoughts are that this series stands as a standalone series that can be watched and enjoyed by anyone who only may have a cursory knowledge of Game of Thrones.
Yep.
In keeping with its honoured predecessor, it is very brutal and bloody, but no gratuitous sex scenes. However, there is one scene at the start of the second episode, when Sir Arlan emerges from his cottage to relieve himself. You'll definitely see that all knights are not created equal, and well, let's just say he is very well blessed in the trouser department. My only complaint with the Knights of the Seven Kingdoms is it's dark. There are some scenes where you may see a flicker of torchlight and two disembodied voices, but that's pretty much it. As a newbie to the whole Game of Thrones universe, this series serves as an ideal show to whet your appetite. So please, watch it.
My other things
Moving
as well.
On to Doctor Who, we once again dabble with the audio mongers at Big Finish. This time, it's the turn of Peter Davison with his round, open, bland face. And Nyssa, in a series of half-hour episodes, collectively titled The Demons of Red Lodge and Other Stories. These tales are more potable than the usual Peter Davison episodes. The titular story is set in a year before the Great Fire of London and has a strong air of Invasion of the Body Snatchers about it.
Yes.
The Doctor and Nyssa have two doppelgangers to deal with. A good story, but I feel it could have been sort of set at any point in time and space, and not just nailed to that particular time. The second story has an interesting premise. A creature called an entropy siren latches on to a prog rock musician in the late 1960s in order to create the sound that was present at the creation of the universe, to recreate its environment, and to release its sisters. My question is, why vilify prog rock? When all it had to do was play something by the beautiful South in order to unleash waves of misery and despondency across the universe.
Oh, dear.
An interesting antagonist, and one I would like to see and hear from once again. The third story I listened to, where the Doctor is imprisoned for informing the prison governor of an impending disaster, I feel is the weakest one I listened to. The half-hour format makes the stories more punchy and faster-paced, which I feel is a good thing. Anyway, that's enough of my ramblings for tonight. I'll be back in the studio for the next podcast. So, until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye. He didn't mention anything about the Force episode.
No.
No, well.
Didn't have anything to say about Floyd, but he's right. Prog rock, late 1960s, psychedelia.
Yeah.
I'm going to believe myself.
You did make good points about how dark some of
the footage was on Night of the Seven Kingdoms. It was.
One episode was entirely set at night.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's no artificial light.
Yeah.
And it was fine on my screen, I'd say, but
It didn't really look too bad on mine either. I mean, I think I was watching that on the iPad.
I was watching the OLED or something. The first three on one of those old LCD screens.
Oh, yeah.
So you get the wrong angle, it all sort of whites out. So I was struggling thinking it was something to do with that. Oh, well, I shall upgrade to the newer laptop for the next one.
Yeah, get yourself an OLED or something. And yeah. Maybe it will help. Something with good contrast.
Well, if there's nothing else, lead us out, Crumb. Well,
yeah, he could have done us a lead out on there.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
Shall I then?
Go for it. Go on.
Well, and so that brings us to the end of another podcast. But never fear. Next time there'll be more of the same. More fun for Rollity and Jollity. Uh-huh. More news and reviews. More who, old and new. So until that...
W for Willy!
Comes wobbly.
Winsomely.
Waggling.
Wobblingly.
No, I got nothing. I don't know. I'm still too
waggling.
I'm still too shocked, yes.
Wandering.
Yeah. Willfully.
Towards us.
Wantonly.
Yes. What's the next bit?
This is me.
This is me, Jay, saying cheerio.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
What kind of man would put a known criminal in charge of a major branch of government, apart from, say, the average voter?
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 492, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Jay Doran, Keith Dunn and Scott Fuller. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Isosceles, Hercules, Tescles.
Ooh. Yes, that's better if I shout a bit more.
You go boom shaka laka laka, boom shaka laka laka, boom shaka, boom shaka, boom shaka laka laka.
A whole minute.
If we can.
Well, Karen's not here, so, you know, Adam won't burst out laughing again.
Probably not. I close my eyes. Ready? No, it doesn't matter.
It's when the spots start appearing inside your eyes.
I turned around to look, and the way that you two had your eyes just scrunched up tight, it just almost gave me a fit of the giggles right there.
Scott has gone an unusual colour.
Does it pick up the clock when we all shut up?
No, I can hear it ticking. Really. That one doesn't make much noise. This one's the noisy one here.
Yeah. Oh, right, yes, that's probably...
And it's actually behind all the mics, so it doesn't really pick up.
Just hear our hearts pounding as we're about to pass out.
Well, as I said, the purple and blue spots start appearing. Probably time to start breathing again. Oh, God, I have to relive the Willy.
Living wrench-free.
Welcome to my life.
It's just wiggling around in the head.
It's almost two-hand. Oh,
my God, I mean, he didn't need a separate sword, did he?
It was like a super squirter, wasn't it?
So it would have taken a lot of pumping.
I mean, have you ever been on a horse when a horse is having a pee? I mean, it was like that watching this guy.
Okay, after that little banter that's probably going to end up in the outtakes.
I'm sure.
Mighty pork swords aside.
Hang on. You'll all edit together.
Yeah, we'll all edit together. It's all right. Apart from, say, the average voter. Yes. Mr. Pratchett wrote that.
Oh, obviously a while ago then.